Welcome to our study for January 4th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 21:04 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again today. Glad to be with you. I hope you're doing well. It's wonderful to see you. Chapter 3, paragraph 12. Today, which is the final paragraph, not the chapter, not the final chapter, but the final paragraph of chapter 3, in the Crucible article, C-cubed, or Crucible of Credible Creed. We've got 1 Kings chapter 10, Ezekiel chapter 12, and Revelation chapter 4. Let's begin with the Crucible article, chapter 3, paragraph 12. The excellent correspondency of the time of Moses with the reign of Apophis, we discussed in Moses. Here's the article of Moses right here, and it says, at the time of the birth of Moses, this is near the beginning of part one of the there are no chapter numbers in the article of Moses. This is near the beginning, you know, it's just after this, or fairly soon after the picture of Pharaoh's daughter. Several paragraphs later, it says, at the time of the birth of Moses, this is part one of the article called Moses. The Pharaoh who was ruler of Egypt was called Apophis, it says, at the time of the birth of Moses. And that's only true because of our exact chronology. These correspondences can only occur when we have the chronology of Moses correct and the chronology of Egypt correct. So it requires a lot. And it is only strengthened, or it only is strengthened, when the Rhind mathematical papyrus documents the 33rd year of Apophis, who's also called Apepi and Osere, or Osere, as the time of its writing in one place. Okay, the Rhind papyrus documents the 33rd year of Apophis, although we're not even sure if it mentions his name. I don't think it does mention his name there, does it? I'm trying to remember now. And the 11th year of the Pharaoh, thought certainly to be Camuti, the successor of Apophis, the latter date being near when Moses left Egypt. Just about the time of the 11th year of an unnamed pharaoh, who we certainly think is Camuti, the son of Apophis, the successor of Apophis. And so the 33rd year, we believe, refers to Apophis because he ruled for 40 years and Camuti did not. So the latter date, the 11th year of Camuti, being near when Moses left Egypt. But this Rhind papyrus, it's the bigger and more remarkable discovery here, which is what confirms the chronology. And it is also what constitutes the first ever document, which is demonstrably written by the hand of Moses, which is the Rhind papyrus. We could surmise very logically that it could have been written by his hand, at the very least, which is incredible. A find which, I freely confess, begs exceed my prior work. If I've really identified a document written by the hand of Moses, and I'm the first one to do that, that is better than anything else I've ever done in my writing, apparently. I mean, it would be debatable, probably, but when he was exposed, the daughter of Pharaoh picked him up and brought him up as her own son. That's what the Bible tells us. Consequently, Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. In fact, he was powerful in his words and deeds, and when the time of his 40th year was being fulfilled, it came into his heart to make an inspection of his brothers, the sons of Israel. And when he caught sight of a certain one being unjustly treated, he defended him and executed vengeance for the one being abused by striking the Egyptian down. He was supposing his brothers would grasp that God was giving them salvation by his hand, but they did not grasp it. And the next day he appeared to them as they were fighting, and he tried to bring them together again in peace, saying, men, he could have said brothers, but he said, men, you are brothers, why do you treat each other unjustly? Men, you are brothers, why do you treat each other unjustly? Why? Because they were fighting. He said unjustly. But the one that was treating his neighbor unjustly thrust him away, saying, who appointed you ruler and judge over us? You do not want to do away with me in the same manner that you did away with the Egyptian yesterday, do you? Moses had killed an Egyptian the day before. At this speech, Moses took to flight, and the Bible tells us all of these things, and became an alien resident in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. Acts, that's from the book of Acts, chapter 7, little children, verses 21 through 29. So Moses killed a man, and then shortly thereafter, he fled from Egypt, and that's the end of this chapter. We even have a picture here of the mummy head of Ramesses III, who ruled in our chronology from 1223 to 1191 BCE. That's the end of chapter 3, the Crucible article. Ecclesiastes 1 and 6 is our proverb for today, little children. The wind is going to the south and it is circling around to the north. The wind, round and round, round and round, it is continually circling and right back to its circlings. The wind is returning, it just goes in circles. The wind has to go in circles because when the wind blows one way, when it blows away, we have a low pressure. When it blows toward us, we have a high pressure. And in order for the pressure to equalize and even out over time, the wind has to blow in circles, of course, because otherwise, if the wind kept blowing away from us, we'd be living in a vacuum. We have to have wind coming in, or air coming back, to replace the air that blows away from us. So the wind, the Bible knew that the wind blows in circles. Written as this book of Ecclesiastes was in the time of King Solomon, and we're studying King Solomon, 1 Kings chapter 10. Now the Queen of Sheba was hearing the report about Solomon in connection with the name of Jehovah, so she came to test him with perplexing questions. Finally, she arrived at Jerusalem with a very impressive train, camels carrying balsam oil and very much gold and precious stones, and she came on into Solomon and began to speak to him all that had happened to be close to her heart. Solomon, in turn, went on to tell her all her matters. There proved to be no matter hidden from the king that he did not tell her. So how did he know her? He didn't know her. He was like a prophet. He was somebody who got information from Jehovah, or what people today would call a psychic, or something like that. When the Queen of Sheba got to see all the wisdom of Solomon, and we're not saying that he was a psychic, he was just a very wise man who probably could discern things about people just by being in their presence. And this is what, there are also people like that today, of course, and they might be called psychics, but they're just very, very perceptive people. When the Queen of Sheba got to see all the wisdom of Solomon in the house that he had built, and the food of his table, and the sitting of his servants, and the table service of his waiters, and their attire, and his drinks, and his burnt sacrifices that he regularly offered up at the house of Jehovah, then there proved to be no more spirit in her. So she said to the king, true has the word proved to be that I heard in my own land about your matters and about your wisdom. And I did not put faith in the words until I had come, that my own eyes might see. And look, I had not been told the half. You have surpassed in wisdom and prosperity the things heard to which I listened. happy are your men. Happy are these servants of yours who are standing before you constantly, listening to your wisdom. May Jehovah your God come to be blessed, who has taken delight in you by putting you upon the throne of Israel, because Jehovah loves Israel to time indefinite, so that he appointed you as king to render judicial decision and righteousness. That was an astounding statement by the Queen of Sheba, that she would speak about Jehovah. Then she gave the king 120 talents of gold, which is about 4.5 tons of the measure of the imperial ton, which is, you know, not as big as a metric ton, which would be, you know, it's about 10% less than a metric ton. And a very great deal of balsam oil and precious stones she gave to the king. There never came any more the like of that balsam oil for quantity, such as the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon, and Hiram's fleet of ships that carried gold from Ophir, also brought from Ophir timbers of algum trees in very great amount and precious stones. And the king proceeded to make out of the timbers of the algum trees supports for the house of Jehovah and for the house of the king, and also harps and stringed instruments for the singers. Timbers of algum trees like this have not come in, nor have they been seen down to this day. And King Solomon himself gave the Queen of Sheba all her delight for which she asked, apart from what he gave her according to the open-handedness of King Solomon. After that she turned about and went to her own land, she together with her servants. Imagine her transporting 4.5 tons of gold. Could she have brought that much in a train of camels, carrying them over land, carrying the gold over land in bars of gold? Or did she perhaps somehow, well, she would have to, because, I mean, to come, you have to go overland to get to Jerusalem. At some point, you'd have to cross by land. And the weight of the gold that came to King Solomon in 1 year amounted up to 666 talents of gold. Apart from the men of travel, this was not all from the Queen of Sheba. We saw that she only brought 120 talents, which is still a lot of gold. But this 666 talents of gold was brought to Solomon apart from the men of travel and the profit from the traders and all the kings of the Arabs and the governors of the land. Apart from that 666 talents of gold. And King Solomon went on to make 200 large shields of alloyed gold, 600 shekels of gold he proceeded to lay upon each large shield. An alloy would be harder than gold, which is very soft, so it wouldn't be a good metal to put on a shield, but the alloy would be sufficiently hard if it was a good alloy, you know, with that property of being hard and strong, whereas the gold would give it the property that it wouldn't tarnish. And 300 bucklers Solomon went on to make of alloyed gold. 3 minas of gold he proceeded to lay upon each buckler. Then the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. Furthermore, the king made a great ivory throne, ivory, made of ivory, and overlaid it with refined gold. There were 6 steps to the throne, and the throne had a round canopy behind it, and there were armrests on this side and on that side by the place of sitting, and 2 lions were standing beside the armrests, and there were 12 lions standing there upon the 6 steps on this side and on that side. No other kingdom had any made just like it. And all the drinking vessels of King Solomon were of gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold. That's not an alloy, right? But for a cup, it's not going to have to be particularly durable like a shield would be, which is being struck by swords and things. There was nothing of silver. It was considered in the days of Solomon as nothing at all. For the king had a fleet of ships of Tarshish on the sea, along with Hiram's fleet of ships. Once every 3 years, the fleet of ships of Tarshish would come, carrying gold and silver, ivory and apes and peacocks. Tarshish is possibly in Spain, so whereas Ophir, the gold of Ophir would be from, I think we believe that's from somewhere down south or the Persian Gulf or somewhere, wherever they got the gold from, or maybe in Africa even. Whereas Tarshish is, people believe anyway, somewhere possibly in the region of Spain. So there were ships that went to Ophir and also ones that went to Tarshish. And the ships from Tarshish would bring gold, silver, ivory, and apes and peacocks. And King Solomon was greater in riches and in wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. And all the people of the earth were seeking the face of Solomon to hear his wisdom that God had put in his heart. And they were bringing each his gift, articles of silver and articles of gold and garments and armor and balsam oil, horses and mules, as a yearly matter, of course. And Solomon kept gathering more chariots and steeds, and he came to have 1,400 chariots and 12,000 steeds. And he kept them stationed in the chariot cities and close by the king in Jerusalem. And the king came to make the silver in Jerusalem like the stones, and cedar wood he made like the sycamore trees that are in the Shephelah for great quantity. And there was And there was the export of the horses that Solomon, it's called an import from Egypt. He imported them. The export of the horses that Solomon had from Egypt, and the company of the king's merchants would themselves take the horse drove for a price. And a chariot customarily came up and was exported from Egypt for 600 silver pieces, and a horse for 150. And that was the way it was for all the kings of the Hittites and the kings of Syria. It was by means of them that they did the exporting. Importing, as far as from the standpoint of Israel, they were importing. But from the standpoint of Egypt, it was being exported. And it's interesting that the word used there is export and not import. It's rather curious, actually. Why not say import? Ezekiel chapter 12, and the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Son of man, in the midst of a rebellious house is where you are dwelling, that have eyes to see, but they actually do not see, that have ears to hear, but they actually do not hear, for they are a rebellious house. As for you, O son of man, make up for yourself luggage for exile, and go into exile in the daytime before their eyes. And you must go into exile from your place to another place before their eyes. Perhaps they will see, though they are a rebellious house, and you must bring out your luggage, like luggage for exile, in the daytime before their eyes, and you yourself will go out in the evening before their eyes, like those being brought forth for exile. Before their eyes, bore your way through the wall, and you must do the bringing out through it. Before their eyes, you will do the carrying on the shoulder itself. During the darkness, you will do the bringing out. You will cover your very face, that you may not see the earth, because a portent is what I have made you to the house of Israel. And I proceeded to do just the way that I had been commanded. My luggage I brought out, just like luggage for exile, in the daytime, and in the evening I bored my way through the wall by hand. During the darkness I did the bringing out. On my shoulder I did the carrying before their eyes. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me in the morning, saying, Son of man, did not those of the house of Israel, the rebellious house, say to you, What are you doing? Say to them, This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. As regards the chieftain, who would be the king of Israel, Zedekiah, that's who would be the king at that time, which is about 4 years or less, or, let me see now, 5, 9, 3, 6 years or less, certainly, before the, at least according to chapter 1 of Ezekiel, which was the fifth year of the exile, so that in the about, you know, another 6 years, Jerusalem would be destroyed. So there is this pronouncement against Jerusalem as regards the chieftain, who was Zedekiah, and all the house of Israel who are in the midst of them. Say, I am a portent for you, just as I have done. That is the way it will be done to them. So Ezekiel is a portent. Into exile, into captivity they will go. And as regards the chieftain who is in the midst of them, who is, in this case, this is talking with Zedekiah, evidently, on the shoulder he will do the carrying in the darkness and go out. Through the wall they will bore, in order to do the bringing forth through it, do the bringing forth. And his face he will cover in order that he may not see with his own eye the earth. And I shall certainly spread my net over him, and he must be caught in my hunting net. And I will bring him to Babylon, to the land of the Chaldeans, but it he will not see, and there he will die. And in fact, Zedekiah was, his eyes were blinded by Nebuchadnezzar before he was brought to Babylon. So this prophecy came true very shortly, very soon after this. Evidently, fewer than 6 years after this. To the land of the Chaldeans, but he will not see. He was blinded, as it turned out. And there he will die, and that's where Zedekiah did die, was in the land of the Chaldeans, of course, as the Bible tells us after, or in other, in the book of Jeremiah, which we read already, for example. And all who are round about him as a help, and all his military bands I shall scatter to every wind. Of course, the story about Zedekiah is told in the book of Kings and Chronicles and Jeremiah, and I believe in all those places. I'm choking because there's smoke in the house here. And I'm going to have to start the fan. My filter. I'll open the window here. Let some more air in here. Fresh air. Yeah. The HEPA filter does a great job of removing smoke from the air. I think I'm going to have to start to do it. To run the filter, which is very noisy. I've got the filter running in the other room as well. It shows there was more smoke that got escaped from the wood stove while I was starting the fire. Today I wasn't as fastidious about the smoke. And all who are round about him as a help, and all his military bands I shall scatter to every wind, and a sword I shall draw out after them. And they will have to know that I am Jehovah when I disperse them among the nations, and I actually scatter them among the lands. So I can breathe better now. I could wear a mask, but then I couldn't talk. And I will leave remaining from them a few men from the sword. But you would never wear a mask if a smoke caused by your fire in the house, in the wood stove. You'd just open the windows and turn on your HEPA filters. But I will leave remaining, it says, verse 16, from them a few men from the sword and from the famine and from the pestilence, in order that they may recount all their detestable things among the nations to whom they must come in, and they will have to know that I am Jehovah. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, excuse me, son of man, I feel better now, with quaking your bread you should eat, and with agitation and with anxious care your water you should drink. And you must say to the people of the land, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said to the inhabitants of Jerusalem upon the soil of Israel. With anxious care, their bread they will eat, and with horror, their water they will drink, in order that its land may be laid desolate of its fullness because of the violence of all those dwelling in it. And the inhabited cities themselves will be devastated, and the land itself will become a mere desolate waste, and you will have to know that I am Jehovah. And the word of Jehovah occurred further to me, saying, Son of man, what is this proverbial saying that you people have on the soil of Israel, saying the days are prolonged and every vision has perished? Therefore say to them, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. I shall certainly cause this proverbial saying to cease, and they will no more say it as a proverb in Israel. But speak to them, the days have drawn near, and the matter of every vision, for there will no more prove to be any valueless vision nor double-faced divination in the midst of the house of Israel. For I myself, Jehovah, shall speak what word I shall speak, and it will be done. There will be no postponement any more, for in your days, O rebellious house, I shall speak a word and certainly do it, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, Son of man, look, those of the house of Israel are saying, the vision that he is visioning is many days off, and respecting times far off he is prophesying. Therefore say to them, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. There will be no postponement any more as to any words of mine. What word I shall speak, it will even be done, is the utterance of the Sovereign Lord Jehovah. That's the end of Ezekiel chapter 12. And we now have Revelation chapter 4. I'm going to try turning off the fan because I don't think we need to have that fan running right now. I think that the fact that I let the fresh air in might be enough right now, but we'll see how much of an effect that makes. After these things, Revelation chapter 4, I saw, this is John writing, and look, an open door in heaven, and the first voice that I heard was as of a trumpet speaking with me, saying, come on up here, and I shall show you the things that must take place. After these things, I immediately came to be in the power of the Spirit, and look, a throne was in its position in heaven, and there is one seated upon the throne, and the one seated is in appearance like a jasper stone and a precious red-colored stone. And round about the throne there is a rainbow like an emerald in appearance. And round about the throne there are 24 thrones, and upon these thrones I saw seated 24 elders, dressed in white outer garments, and upon their heads golden crowns. And out of the throne there are proceeding lightnings, and voices, and thunders, and there are seven lamps of fire burning before the throne, and these mean the seven spirits of God. And before the throne there is, as it were, a glassy sea like crystal, and in the midst of the throne and around the throne there are four living creatures that are full of eyes in front and behind. Remember the creatures in the book of Ezekiel. And the first living creature is like a lion, and the second living creature is like a young bull, and the third living creature has a face like a man's, and the fourth living creature is like a flying eagle. How does that correspond to the creatures described by Ezekiel? And as for the four living creatures, each one of them respectively has six wings round about, and underneath they are full of eyes. And they have no rest day and night as they say, holy, holy, holy is Jehovah the God, the Almighty, who was and who is and who is coming. And whenever the living creatures offer glory and honor and thanksgiving to the one seated upon the throne, the one that lives forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before the one seated upon the throne and worship the one that lives forever and ever. And they cast their crowns before the throne, saying, You are worthy, Jehovah, even our God, to receive the glory and the honor and the power, because you created all things, and because of your will they existed and were created. That's the end of Revelation 4. Holy, holy, holy is Jehovah God the Almighty, who was and who is and who is coming. So, really, the only person who is so holy as to require the word holy three times as a description of him is Jehovah. He is holy, triply holy. There's no other like him. He's the only one worthy, because he created all things, verse 11. It was verse 8 that said, the four living creatures have no rest day and night as they say, Holy, holy, holy is Jehovah God the Almighty, who was and who is and who is coming. And these four living creatures, they have quite a lot in common with the creatures mentioned by Ezekiel, if they're not in fact identical. But the difference is, of course, the creatures mentioned by Ezekiel had four faces each, and the four faces were the face of a lion, a bull, a man, and an eagle. Whereas in this case, each creature is distinct. So one creature is a lion, and the second one is a young bull. The third has a face like a man's, and the fourth is like a flying eagle. And that concludes our study of the scriptures for today, little children. Our video is almost over. We have less than a minute, so we've allocated the time fairly well, I think. It's remarkable that this mentions thrones, and we saw that in the Book of Kings, Solomon's throne was mentioned, and this was not by any contrivance of mine. It just happens the way we've been studying. Jehovah's been apparently directing us to do that. And we've been studying the book of Ezekiel, and this corresponds to what we're reading in Revelation here as well, with the living creatures. It's remarkable. There's some remarkable correlation. And with that, let's conclude our study with saying it's January 4th, 2024 of the Common Era. 2024, we're in the new year now again. It's 21:36 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Have a wonderful day. And on my behalf, this is Gully. And this is Cassie, my two timepieces. And they are saying bye for now. It's going to be hopefully a great, great year. We will live one day at a time. And that's all for now.